This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana, and the region that we call Acadiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses across the country, functioning as their complete IT department. From networks to phones, hosting of servers, and a service-oriented help desk, Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. If you're wondering if Raider could help your growing business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com, or even better, stop by their offices and see the team in action. There are many outstanding professionals in Lafayette, Louisiana, but I must say without a doubt that today's guest, Patrick S. Ottinger, sets the bar higher for all of us practicing attorneys. I want to welcome you to the show today, Pat.
Thank you, Jan. It was very kind of you. Appreciate it.
I'm going to provide your background before we get started, and then we can talk about your career here in Lafayette and other endeavors that you've been involved in. Patrick S. Ottinger graduated from USL here in Lafayette and the LSU Law Center, where he was a member of the Moot Court Board. In private practice since December 1973, Pat focuses on corporate and commercial law, with a heavy emphasis on oil and gas, and of course, financial transactions, real estate, and mediation and arbitration. Pat served as Lafayette City Parish Attorney from January 2004 to January 2011 during the term of Joey Durrell, having held the position for 7 years, longer than any other attorney. Pat also serves as a Special Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Louisiana in water bottoms litigation. Pat serves as chair of the Louisiana Mineral Law Institute and has been an adjunct professor at the LSU Law Center since 1996, where he has taught mineral law from the course materials he authored. He is the author of Louisiana Mineral Leases, a treatise, published in June 2016, and has also provided course materials in other publications. Pat is currently a fellow of the Louisiana Bar Foundation and served as president of the Lafayette Parish Bar Association and, most importantly, president of the Louisiana State Bar Association in 1998 through 99. Pat, there's a lot more that we'll get into during the interview, but I just wanted to get in how much you've given back to our profession, and thank you for making time today to be on Discover Lafayette.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you asking me, and I look forward to it, and I appreciate the conversational style, and we'll see where this goes then. Thank you.
As we talked about when I asked you to be a guest on the show, Discover Lafayette's purpose is to let people get to know the rich fabric that we enjoy here in Lafayette. There's all kinds of outstanding professionals, and I think when you moved back here in 1973 after graduating from LSU, you jumped right into the oil and gas industry as an attorney, and that was really in oil and gas's heyday.
That's exactly right. I had the good fortune of going to work for a small law firm that was very active in the oil and gas practice. And talking this through, just a few points I now remember is that having been admitted in the spring of 1974, it was 1 year before a body of law called the Mineral Code went into effect. I practiced, albeit a brief period of time, under the old legal regime, which did not have the statutory law codified in the Mineral Code, and that has really served me to give me an appreciation of the value of that document called the Mineral Code, which became effective in January 1, 1975. And secondly, pretty quickly after starting to practice, we encountered the so-called Arab oil embargo, where oil prices went just through the roof, and so the oil and gas industry was very, very active. Practicing law in that area was very, very exciting. And those two aspects kind of coincided through no fault of my own, or it's not timing. Something that happened by design, but it has created a very, to me personally, very interesting and powerful springboard on which my practice started. So I hope I have more opportunity today to tell you that I love the practice of oil and gas law. And it's given me great opportunities to meet wonderful people and interesting cases. And I pause to say, I I have a saying that no client likes to hear he has an interesting case, but, but it is certainly true in the nature of the oil and gas, where you're dealing with lots of money, lots of issues that are very, very interesting to a lawyer, maybe not always to the client, but to the lawyer. And so it's just been a, it's been fun. I will use that word to say that practicing in that area of the law has been very rewarding to me, in terms of the exposures I've had to individuals, issues, and things of that sort.
I know when I was a young attorney, I moved here in 83, Pat, and I was very fortunate to work under some seasoned professionals that practice oil and gas law at the firm that used to be called Broadhurst Brook, and I was amazed. I thought it would just be like contracts, but not only were we running the records, but preparing division orders. I mean, when you talked about the money involved in the oil and gas industry and the interest that are involved down to the, it seemed like the 1/1,000,000th percent, but people, you know, there was so much money involved. And when you moved here, the industry was in its heyday, as I said. There were a lot of outside influences, but Lafayette was also on the uptick. It was really growing. So you were here
right
at the perfect time.
Exactly. Yeah. And your last point's well taken. And it reminds me that on Friday of this week, I'm teaching a seminar for the Lafayette Bar Association.
I will be there. Yeah.
Good.
End of the year credits.
Exactly.
Here,
right. And the topic I chose is, without giving its name because it's not important, but oil and gas issues of interest to the real estate lawyer. Mm-hmm. And the point you make is very, very true. And there are a lot of issues, and we might even call them legal defects in documents that are totally academic until oil and gas is drilled.
Oh, yeah.
And then, and only then, it becomes important, and people are willing to spend the money to litigate them. And
right.
So it's not a plain vanilla practice at all. It's not a practice that is in any sense monotonous or what have you. So I just enjoy that phase of the practice of law.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're lucky to have you here. And I want to jump forward. I remember, we're all friends. I should disclose that. And you and my husband, John Swift, are very close friends.
Certainly.
And I'll never forget, we were leaving one of the bowl games in January 2004, and you called us all excited. And Joey Durrell had offered you the position of city parish attorney. And I remember looking at my husband thinking, I know that, Pat, you weren't really involved in that election. Your body of work stood on its own, and I think Joey really wanted the best that he could be surrounded with. And when he called you to offer you that position, I think that was really setting Lafayette on a an upward curve. I mean, we were so fortunate to have you serving for 7 years, but it was really interesting to me because I had been around politics, and you weren't involved in that race. You
absolutely
were
absolutely not.
Pat, you know, you were practicing law, minding your own business, being as busy as you've always been, and to take on the city parish work. I'd like you to maybe talk about some of that, because that's a full-time job, much less maintaining the practice that you did.
It really is, and I will say that, taking that one step further, Joey Durrell is a dear friend today.
Now, yeah.
But I did not know Joey prior to that election. In fact, when he called me, I said, well, Joey, I'm going to let you. I didn't vote for you. I voted for a gentleman who didn't make the runoff. And he said, I don't care about that. And so there had been a search committee. And moving forward, he offered me the job. And I knew absolutely zero about governmental law and things of that issue,
which is way outside of what you were doing, corporate law.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it was a challenge, and things were in a place where I could do it, and I agreed to do it. And there were learning curves on the first day, and there were learning curves on the last day. And if I could share just a little example of that.
Well, that's why you're here.
One of the first, I remember this all the time, one of the first issues on my plate was a phone call from the, I'm talking the second day on the job, a phone call from the chief of police, where the police department had a police dog, worked with drug officers, if you will. And the dog had spent its useful life and had to be retired, and they wanted to give it to the officer with whom that dog was associated. And I had to look into it a little bit, and I came to the following conclusion. that put forth three options. And it's all based on the fact that under our Constitution,
right.
you cannot give away public property.
Right.
That dog was public property, as crude as that might sound, in that it was purchased by public dollars. And there's no exception in the Constitution to, except in the case of a police dog that's spent its useful life. So my options were to, legal options were to violate the Constitution by giving it to the officer. We were not going to do that. Spend a lot of money to, you know the saying, you can't teach an
old dog
new tricks. This is kind of the reverse of that. You have to spend money to untrain the dog in certain respects and then sell it as surplus property, which was not
like
a good...
like an old chair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You get no money for it and whatever. Or euthanize the dog. So my
wife
wouldn't have tolerated that. So we actually came up with the idea. There's a very archaic principle in the civil code called deposit. And it looks like a lease and smells like a lease, but it's not really a lease. And you create a document that mm-hmm. we came to use, approved by the city council, to deposit the dog with the officer where he took over the responsibility mm-hmm. for it, knowing, heaven forbid, that sooner or later the dog will expire on its own.
Oh
so we
kind gosh.
Of found a way around that constitutional challenge. And that was a very early reminder that this is a different type of job, you know? So, but over the years, I've learned a lot.
Euthanized the dog.
Yeah, that was not a good option.
I'm still thinking about that.
Exactly. Right. So that was a little bit of thinking out the uh-huh. box to solve a problem that did not violate the Constitution,
right.
was perfectly legal and in the light of day. But Joey Durrell was such a dynamic, progressive, mm-hmm. Different type of politician. He was a thinker, a great visionary, and you know all the things that have been accomplished mm-hmm. during his term and what have you. And so it afforded many, many unique things, unique issues that were at the end of the day, were quite frankly fun to
right.
deal with and whatever, but a lot of hard work, a lot of challenges, a lot of lawsuits, a lot mm-hmm. of issues of that sort. But it's a job like no other, you know, and at the same time I was practicing law. So
Right, exactly. and trying to be a dad and
right.
a husband and all that, which mm-hmm. we'll get into in a bit. You know, you mentioned that Joey was a different kind of politician. I don't think he ever really was a politician. I know he had to get elected.
Right.
And that's political work, but he took on issues that probably any career politician wouldn't have. And one that comes to my mind is LUS Fiber, the
right.
Fiber to the Home Initiative. And you were a very important part of that with Terry Huval, with LUS, and Joey.
I was
and
very...
And Dee Stanley.
Exactly. And if you allow me just to step back, because when I use the word politician, I did hesitate, because you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected because he was not a politician, but he ran in a political race. And... Joey was a very much what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to put a filter on him a few times when he used to be on the radio station, radio program. But all that said, back
that.
To LUS Fiber. LUS Fiber kicked off very early in Joey's term and thus in my engagement with the city. And that's another example that one had to really study up on and what have you. And through the vision of Terry Huval and certainly Joey and Dee and others, and backed by the city council at that time, mm-hmm. of course, it was one of the most magnificent undertakings in the history of this community. And I pause again to say that the model for that was the utility system itself,
exactly.
which had to be ordained by the Louisiana Supreme Court at the turn of the previous century
mm-hmm.
because of the laws then in effect. And so it was when we ended up at the Supreme Court in November of 2006, if my memory is correct, it was kind of 100 years later, here we are to
yeah.
seek the approval of the Supreme Court on this particular bond issue and whatnot. But I think it's done magnificent things for this community. The building in which we sit, I think, is a little bit of a tribute to that as well. You
it
know?
Is. And where we're sitting in Rader Solutions,
exactly.
I know that Chris Rader has shared with me on this podcast that we have other fine providers,
right.
don't get me wrong, but LUS Fiber allows them to do their work nationally. People can't afford to be down
exactly.
for a second. They're running servers for people all over the country,
right.
big business. And LUS Fiber mm-hmm. raised the bar for
absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a great product, and the band speeds that we have
mm-hmm.
in this community are second to none in the world.
Right.
But there were a lot of hurdles between mm-hmm. the beginning and to the to the launch date and what have you, and they were very interesting to maneuver, mm-hmm. including some bonding issues and regulatory issues through the state, through some legislation. So that is, I think, is if you had to choose one of mm-hmm. many centerpieces of the Durell administration for 12 years, I'd put that at the very top.
I think so. And I think 100 years from now, wherever Lafayette is in its course of, you know, history, right. I think people will look back and see that. On this show, early on, we had Lynn Guidry, and I don't know if you know him,
Pat.
He's
Absolutely.
A well-regarded architect.
Certainly.
That is a historian of Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And hearing his story, the way that he talks about the history of Lafayette, how we became the hub city, before even the utility system, people here were visionary enough to build roads out to all the small towns, so everybody had to come through Lafayette to shop,
exactly.
to get to their next destination. And so that allowed the city to be one of the first in the region to have its own utility system, which led us to the oil center, which led us to,
Certainly.
Like you said, LUS Fiber. So it's I like to bring those in because I think people don't always realize how rich our history is here
Certainly.
In this region.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
And
so,
your reference to Hub, that
Hub,
you know,
City.
The notion of non-parallel streets is a big thing in Lafayette. It's probably why
long
we
lots.
It's probably why we have a six corners in addition to a four corners,
right.
because all those things kind of came together and what have uh-huh. you. But we do get from here to there, but you're exactly right. I've heard Lynn's presentation in that regard. It's just really very, very interesting. And uh-huh. so I'd like to think that along that line, the LUS Fiber project would be up there with some of the,
oh, there's no
the great innovations that Lafayette has to enjoy.
Right.
Certainly.
And it's been well needed with the ups and downs of the oil and gas industry. Right. I think having this LUS Fiber
sure.
has just been a boon for our parish. Any other memories before we move on? Anything else about being city parish attorney that
well,
really you remember as a life achievement? Or
there are probably memories I would have in the very pleasant category, and then others as well, of course, uh-huh. you know, just some of the contention that exists, understandably, without getting into it. The red light issues, for example,
oh,
and
yeah.
traffic lights
yeah.
and some other things. But on balance, it was more positive than mm-hmm. negative. And I will say this, a value of, if I may, of being brought in from the outside, who was presented with learning curves on day one to mm-hmm. to the very last day, you know, those that take a shot at government employees, never having been in any sense of exposure, that I think is a cheap shot. I mean, for the most part,
right.
in great sense, in saying that, the people I have worked with and had the pleasure to deal with, every aspect mm-hmm. of a very unique client being government, are dedicated and work very hard and not remunerated to the extent that they should be. So mm-hmm. I have great regard for all those people at City Hall, at the Utilities Department, at the Transportation Department, Public Works, Police Department. I'll get in trouble by not naming all of them, but
yeah.
they are excellent people and mm-hmm. who are doing all things for the right reasons, I believe.
I agree. Right. And under your leadership, I was really honored to serve as Assistant City Parish Attorney for Community Development.
Correct.
And I had no idea how much impact that office has on people of every walk of life,
right.
but in particular under-resourced people
Certainly.
Getting into affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, I agree with you. I think people, we can talk about government, but then when you get to know the individuals that work for government, it just opens up, you
That's
know, your heart.
It's
so,
easy to be angry at government, to dislike government, whatever sentiment you have, because that's a faceless mm-hmm. entity. But when you get behind the brick and mortar into the desks and whatever, you meet people who are always cheerful and not fully appreciated, and so I do have great regard
yeah.
for that. That's an exposure that I've now had by virtue of serving as city parish attorney. And, you know, under the charter, the city parish attorney is the chief legal advisor to the president, the administration, all the department heads, the council members, boards and commissions of a wide range and variety, and that does present challenges because a council does not always see eye to eye with the president. We experienced some of those, as you certainly know,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite a process to maneuver, and I survived, and I'm happy for that. Yeah.
I don't know how you survive the council meetings. I'm not talking about the council, but with the public showing up when they have time for discussion, I guess you never knew what was going to come your way.
Know.
You know,
right.
somebody could go to the microphone and have something way out of left field,
exactly.
and
yeah.
and they have every right
Absolutely.
To be asking for assistance or
sure.
or stir it up, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. So you always did a fine job of
that. Those were interesting. Let's leave it at that.
I know. Okay. Yeah, that'd be another show.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What's it like teaching at LSU? I mean, I took mineral law in the 80s under Professor Martin,
sure.
and I know you were buddies, and,
yes.
and you're now, you know, the author of the most current book, Louisiana Mineral Leases. What is it like driving to Baton Rouge? And then I remember, just talking personally, I was a knucklehead. I mean, being at LSU Law School, it's you're not getting the freshmen, though. You're getting the survivors
right.
that are there, the
exactly.
second and third year.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit more skin in the game,
right.
but that's a challenge. Huh?
It's wonderful. When I started in 1996, and I received, let's say, middle of August, but it's in that time frame is when the classes start, about 3 or 4 days prior to classes beginning in the fall of 1996, I get a phone call from the chancellor at the school asking if I wanted to teach the main oil and gas course. And it just
what?
Really took
yeah.
me, yeah. And the story was that the professor who had taught it previously just suddenly decided he was going to retire and they needed to fill in that slot. And so I said, well, send me the materials, let me look at them. And actually, at that time, George Hardy was in
right.
not the best of health.
Right.
And so I went to visit George at his home here in Lafayette. George mm-hmm. was my law professor teaching me the mm-hmm. same course. So it's kind of ironic.
What a fine
and one
fellow.
More irony of that is a few years later, I taught his son. So there's three generations. I started with his father and I taught the mm-hmm. son. But all that said, I decided to do it. And it took a great deal of work and time that I was more than happy to put into it to refine and recast mm-hmm. the materials to kind of fit the mold that I felt was appropriate. And so I've done it since 96. In the last 3 or 4 years, I've shifted to a different course that is a one day a week trip mm-hmm. rather than a 2 day a week trip. I created a seminar that the students are very fond of. And so, but your core question, what's it like? I enjoy it immensely. I enjoy the young minds mm-hmm. That you deal with. And we actually, in my firm, have 7 of my former students. So I almost had the pleasure of the pick of the litter, if you will.
You really do.
Yes. And so I'm very proud of them and try to inspire in them the same passion and interest that I have in the subject matter and mm-hmm. and what have you. But it's been a very enjoyable experience dealing with the students over mm-hmm. the years and seeing some of them whom I taught 20 years ago, seeing them in practice
right.
in various cities is very rewarding and mm-hmm. Great joy to me to have that experience.
I don't know how you've kept it up all these years. You know, I'm just thinking post-Katrina, the traffic patterns right. changed dramatically,
sure.
and you never know what you're going to get on the highway, so that's a,
right.
that's
and
a commitment.
In the semester of Katrina, which was in the fall of 2005, mm-hmm. because Loyola and Tulane
right.
were out of business, many of those students came, and so if I started with 30 students, I ended up with 90, just
wow.
because of having to take on Loyola students
yeah.
and Tulane students who at their home schools were scheduled into a mineral rights class, and so mm-hmm. they kind of rolled in. So that's a particularly unique year, and
yeah,
probably
it
took
was.
Weeks and weeks and weeks to grade papers. So
uh-huh.
that was I do remember that for sure, but.
Yeah.
That's 90 more students that I had, so
right.
I'm okay with that. You know?
Right. Well, while we're still on your practice, I want to get into your volunteer work, Pat, but you you have an active practice besides the oil and gas. I know you arbitrate cases. You're an arbiter. You're mm-hmm. a mediator. Do you travel around the region for that? Is that oil and gas related, or talk about that some?
Much of it is, and I would actually say for the most part it is, although I've done other types of cases. I've gone to Birmingham, Alabama. I've gone to Houston many times, Shreveport many times because of the Haynesville Shale.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have 2 coming up that will be here in Lafayette in the month of December. And so for the most part, they are oil and gas. And when I don't have a conflict, I think they see me as someone who might be able to facilitate the parties and reach an agreement. So that's a different aspect of the practice of law. It's very finite. It's over when it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I enjoy that. It's just a little bit of a different approach to law, but in a non-traditional format, so to speak. So that's becoming a pretty significant part of my practice right now.
I hope this question isn't too left field, but what do you like as a mediator? Are you, because I know you as a kind yet no-nonsense person. Like, you want people to do their research first. You you know, I would always show up prepared when mm-hmm. I had questions for you. When you're dealing with other lawyers, and then I'm sure your cases are worth, some of them I know I've read have been worth a couple hundred million dollars, right. The outcomes. What do you like when you're mediating?
That, in large part, becomes a function of who you're dealing with. You need to evaluate the lawyers more so than the clients, mm-hmm. because the clients have a lawyer there for a purpose who might have had the experience in mediation. So you have to assess who you're dealing with, and by definition, you're doing shuttle diplomacy between two rooms, and your approach in one room may be different than another, because at the end of the day, your mission is to bring the parties together, and mm-hmm. we often say that the best concluding of a mediation is when both parties leave a little bit unhappy, mm-hmm. and it is he or she who thinks that they're there to win every cent on the dollar that's doomed to failure, you know. So through a variety of tools and processes, you need to demonstrate to each party, in a different sense perhaps from the other, the prudence and wisdom of reaching a mm-hmm. conclusion, putting this behind you and moving on and whatnot. So there's not one size that fits all, and different mediation sessions might involve different tools and skills and mm-hmm. and what have you. So it's a challenge as much, what's the saying, it's more art than science or something, you know.
Right.
It's a challenge depending upon the parties with whom you're dealing and what have you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some cases are bigger than others, and the nature of the two parties might be that they will never again see each other, or...
So they let it rip.
Right, yeah. Or... Mm-hmm. You know, the saying, the world is round, and particularly between two oil companies, sooner or later they'll be in business together. And so you try to create an environment that brings some soothed mm-hmm. feelings to the case. So each case is different in that regard, though, of course.
Well, they're lucky to have your experience. When you were talking about how you handle things, I don't know if you remember this. You helped me years ago when I'd just come back to work, and I started getting, I would chair medical malpractice review panels. Mm-hmm. And my first one, I didn't really feel like I knew what to do. So John sat in there. We had the dentist on the phone in that case, and you were sitting there helping me. And I remember I'd say something, and you would like make hand motions like, mm-mm. We'd go out in the room, and you're like, just say less, and you know.
I told you to say less. I cannot believe I told you to say less.
I just laugh when I think about that, because I knew one of the dentists, and I was trying to look super professional, and yet I didn't really know what the heck I was doing, because it was my first case ever. And you were there. You took the time to mentor me, and so many memories come into my mind. But I just want to thank you.
Well,
I know I'm just one of many people you've done that for in your career.
And well, it's, you know, at the end of the day, no matter what the context or subject matter is, you're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that one should try to treat people with dignity, the dignity to which they're entitled. And at the end of the day, it just, mm-hmm. why not? Just it gets the job done in a very much more positive way, I think. You know?
That's your Catholic faith speaking right there, the human dignity. So, I wanted to talk about your volunteer work, Pat. When we met, and I'm bringing in a lot of personal stories, but I enjoy doing that. I met you and your beautiful wife, Cheryl, in New York City.
Right.
And we were traveling. I think you were president of the Lafayette Parish Bar at the time. My daughter Taylor, who's here, was she was an infant.
Right, sure.
And John Swift, my husband, he was going to be president of the Lafayette Parish Bar right after you. I was speaking out in New York on uniform commercial mm-hmm. code issues that I used to focus on. And we all met, and your lovely sons were tiny. I mean, Stuart and Talbot were, I think Talbot was a young teenager and Stuart was younger. And we met in the Russian Tea Room.
I remember
that.
Bar, it was so much fun. Yes.
Yeah, the bar at the Plaza Hotel. And we have been friends ever since.
Right.
But I still have memories of your boys. I remember Stuart in particular, always the man about town. And I hope he listens to this.
But I'll make sure he does.
He was so comfortable calling the waiter. And I was like, we're in New York City and I'm trying to behave. And lovely young man.
Well,
you've done a wonderful job with
your
family.
I'm very proud of them. And
I know.
And you mentioned a number of things that I've done, and that they're fine, they're great. But at the end of the day, it's your children.
Yeah.
In this case, it's my two sons that or the product that mm-hmm. we have brought forth, and I'm very, very proud of them. And so I appreciate you saying that.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about your volunteer work, and I jumped off into that. Right. But mm-hmm. your family has been alongside you
Absolutely.
Through all of your volunteer
On the
activities.
Journey. That's exactly
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were very active for years with the Louisiana Bar Association, which allowed you to make a lasting impact for our profession.
Well, State I had wide. The honor of being the president of the Louisiana State Bar Association in the term of 1998 to 1999. And you know, you have 1 year. You're never as important as you might think you are at the moment. And I think the cautious advice is to not take on too many tasks. Try mm-hmm. to find one, two, or three
right.
that you can really commit to in that particular year to make a difference. And the one program, if you will, that I chose and was fortunate to bring to fruition was the restructuring of bar governance, by which I mean when I was elected as president, the cycle was in your particular geographical area, it's an 11-year cycle. And
oh.
you know your window does not always line up with the window of opportunity to be the president doesn't line up always with your family circumstance or your practice
oh,
circumstance.
I see. So you have to be in line for leadership.
Well, yes, but it would bounce around the state into about less than 11 districts because New Orleans had two or three cycles.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a five-year cycle in New Orleans, but 11 in the what they
small
used to call
towns.
The small towns
yeah,
or
like
what
us.
Have you. So we put in place a committee that toured the state and came up with our current system, which is really a three-year cycle. So I think it's much more manageable to any lawyer in, let's pick on Monroe, Louisiana.
Right.
A lawyer today may know that in 3 years I can position myself to maybe aspire to be the president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different reach of time than 11 years because...
Right. Especially traveling, let's say, from North Louisiana to New
exactly.
Orleans or
right.
Baton Rouge.
So
yeah.
your personal circumstances, family-wise, mm-hmm. age of kids, their education, where they are in the education
yeah.
process, your own personal practice is hard to manage if you're looking 11 years out, but it's mm-hmm. more manageable in 3 years. And so that was adopted by the Board of Governors and put into place. And so mm-hmm. I think it's opened up the pool of people who are willing and able to serve in that. So that is one of the main things that we accomplished. I was very, uh-huh. very happy with that. But
what a commitment that was, though. I don't know if probably other professions are the same, but serving as president for that year, you pretty much, I'm sure you practiced because you always keep
right.
balls in the air, but for many attorneys, that is a full-time position, serving as president. It's a commitment and a sacrifice
it is.
To the
and
law firm that they come
right.
from.
Right, and you mentioned travel. I mean, the lawyer who is in New Orleans who happens to be the president is one thing. The bar office is mm-hmm. two blocks away from your office. The lawyer in Shreveport, that's a different matter. And so you're taking a day or so out to travel and what
right.
have you. And geographical distance from New Orleans is a factor there. But and again, in that year, I was practicing and teaching at law school and serving as bar president. So it was a bit of a blur,
mm-hmm.
as it was later when I was Lafayette City Parish attorney. But it was very rewarding. You meet wonderful lawyers throughout the state, the judges, you deal with the Supreme Court, and then outside of the state, you go to various conferences where you mm-hmm. learn particular subject matter and try to bring programs back and improve your own programs. And
right.
so it was a very rich experience that I'm very honored to have had the opportunity to do that.
It's hard to believe it's been almost 20 years.
I know,
but
next
Taylor's
year,
grown up. You know,
exactly, exactly. 20 years,
yeah.
Next year will be my 20th anniversary,
yeah.
which is just incredible to me.
Yeah, thank you for all your service mm. in that. And I want to look and see some other things we may not have discussed. Is there any other area of your practice that we haven't talked about that you think, you know, is meaningful for today, like in Lafayette? Or where is the oil and gas industry, if I can ask you that?
The oil and gas industry and the oil and gas service sector in particular are really under some stress now and have mm-hmm. been for a few years. We keep an eye on bankruptcies of oil and gas companies, and that curve is finally on the downsize.
Good.
Things remain flat, but there is a sense of optimism.
Mm-hmm.
I was having this conversation recently, referring back to the service industry. 20 years ago, I could have named 20 drilling companies, and I might be hard-pressed now to name three drilling companies onshore. So when the industry comes back, as it will, the cycle is such that the service side will take some time to catch up and what have you. But we're hopeful that in another year or so, things will be a little more positive than they are now, because at the end of the day, it's your neighbors and your families and your cousins who are under the stress. And, you know, you can make the case that, as I've said before, you know, the dry cleaner is in the oil and gas business because that person depends on their customers who are under some stress, as I say. So that's kind of where things are, and we kind of keep our eye on it, but do think that things are showing some progress down
that's
the road.
That's good news.
Sooner, right down the loop. I say sooner, not as far down the road as it might have been at some time. But it's been a long haul for the last couple of years. But it's very cyclical. If you went back to the 50s and 60s and 70s, and I alluded to the Arab oil embargo, you know, if you tried to graph active rigs versus the price of oil and things like that, it'd be a roller coaster, and it does have those periods of time. But we're all cautiously optimistic that things will turn the
corner. That's good news.
Right, that's right. So.
Do you have any advice for young attorneys starting out? I know you get to meet a lot of the students at the Law Center in Baton Rouge. Any advice you can give to people that are starting out?
I actually use a word in my class, niche, by which I mean that all law students upon graduation and being admitted to the bar start at the same starting line. No one knows anymore or what have you. Some have jobs in a firm that will bring them to be applied only in the personal injury area, the commercial corporate area, or what have you. But in my area of oil and gas, I encourage students and associates to identify two or three areas that become a niche area, by which I mean learn all you can about the law of privilege, the law of liens, because when the clients call, you will be able to answer that. Go to the seminars, read the material, and whatever the niche might be, I think you'd be well served. You may not use it for months and months and months, but the one time that you do, it's a value to the client, and they remember that and what have you. And so that's one thing. Secondly, I would encourage young lawyers to get active in the Bar Association, and particularly in the volunteer programs such as Lafayette Volunteer Lawyers and pro bono type work, which is so important. And and don't forget your family life, which is the most important thing there. So the practice of law is very challenging. It's very demanding, particularly for a young associate who is under the gun to get those billable hours and produce support financial for the firm and what have you. But don't lose sight of your most important aspect of life, which is your family. And so if one can pull off all those together, I think they'll have a good career.
I think they'll have a great life, too. That's wonderful advice.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you've done that, Pat Ottinger. You've been a community player, a very solid family man, and an outstanding attorney. And
you're kind.
So happy you were on Discover Lafayette today.
Well, I'm glad you're my friend, and thank you for inviting me, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to take another moment to thank Raider Solutions for hosting our podcast today. Jason Sakura is sitting right here masterfully doing this. I'm grateful, and I want to thank my daughter, Taylor, for being here and helping with photos and support. And just as importantly, I'd like to thank you for listening to Discover Lafayette. This episode and all episodes can be found on our website at discoverlafayette.net. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcast or any place that you get your podcast. We also have a television show named Discover Lafayette, and that's on our website. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.